United States v. Spillman. Mr. Refier?
Please the court, counsel, konnichiwa sensei. My name is Paul Ray Fior. I represent Dr. Brian Spillman, Advanced Dental Consulting, Inc., and Mobile Dental Services of Indiana, Inc. Dr. Spillman and the corporations are asking this court to reverse the denial of the motion to withdraw a guilty plea. The standard of review is abuse of discretion, and Dr. Spillman and the corporations have met this burden because there are fair and just reasons for the withdrawal of the guilty plea, and there are multiple, and I will list them, and they actually are interrelated. First, Dr.
Why does he want to withdraw his guilty plea? Does he want a trial?
Yes, absolutely.
It sounds pretty mistaken to me, I must say. Could get a heavier sentence, couldn't he?
He would have the opportunity to prove his innocence, and that is what he wants.
Yeah, but if he loses, couldn't he get a heavier sentence? He got a light sentence. Couldn't he get a heavier sentence?
Well, he is not asking to go through some kind of what the odds might be. Because he is innocent, he is wanting his day in court. And so in addition to having proffered sufficient credible evidence into the record, there also was ineffective assistance of counsel, which rendered the pleas involuntary. And then thirdly, the guilty pleas were coerced and involuntary, and the district court colloquy was defective in that it failed to make a more detailed examination of voluntariness relating to the package deal. And then finally, there was the conduct of the prosecutor that was related, and it actually impacted upon how the guilty plea was it was coerced, it was under duress. The record in this case is one in which the defendants submitted substantial affidavits and exhibits, and the government chose not to submit any counter evidence or affidavits. There was the exception. There were two exhibits, but both of those actually ended up helping to corroborate the position of the defendants. Among the evidence that was produced to the court were biopsy reports, and I want to emphasize how this now fits. At the time of the guilty plea, these records were within the possession and control of the government, because all of the records of Dr. Spillman and the defendants had been seized by the government. And even though Dr. Spillman was asserting to his counsel that in the seized documents there was proof of innocence.
Didn't he have copies?
No.
Well, couldn't he ask the government for copies?
What happened was there was a controlled situation in which there was some access to this with supervision, in which the former counsel would not allow Dr. Spillman to even study or even touch any of the documents, and the government would not allow them to take any copies out. And so when Dr. Spillman...
The government wouldn't let him have copies of his own records?
No. What was...
Is that what you're saying?
No, that is not what I'm saying. What they were saying is that the counsel could request some copies, and then they would be made and then received, and that counsel did not obtain any copies and until after the plea bargain itself was basically completed and never ever showed them to Dr. Spillman, and there never was the opportunity for Dr. Spillman to point out what was important about these documents and so forth. Getting back to those biopsy reports, after former counsel...
But you're saying your client committed perjury when he pleaded guilty, right?
Well, it's not perjury when it is under duress.
And That's a separate argument.
Well, in fact, Your Honor, in the...
That's separate from your argument that he's really innocent.
Well, that's true.
But isn't he... Can't he get into trouble for committing perjury?
Well, the reason why it's not perjury, again, is because it is not... It was under duress.
If you lose on that, isn't he in trouble?
Well, of course...
This is real gambling, I think.
Well, I would say that truth is true, and he is standing on his innocence and wanting
to... Yeah, that means he perjured himself.
It's not perjury, and I will submit...
Well, it is perjury. If you say under oath you're guilty, and then you say, no, I was just kidding, that's perjury.
Your Honor, I would suggest that the language of this court in the Stewart case, 1999, which was a case that was relied upon heavily by the government in their brief, which states a believable claim that a plea had been coerced and thus was involuntary would demonstrate a good reason for deceit. That is the... And here's the
but
example...
I don't see what coercion there is here. I don't see your coercion case.
The very example in the Stewart case...
Well, what's the coercion here?
The coercion was the prosecutor had stated that he guaranteed that if Dr. Spillman did not plead guilty, his wife would go to jail, would go to prison.
Well, that's if he's guilty.
No, not that he's guilty, that
well,
he would
sure
plead
it
guilty.
Is. I mean, no, if he didn't plead, she would go to prison. They were going to let her off the hook in exchange for his plea, based on what you're saying. Right?
That was
the duress. The duress was that... I have to plead guilty in order to get her off the hook. Otherwise, we have to go to trial and maybe, I don't know how she was involved, but maybe get convicted, both of us.
Whenever a person
Isn't that the alternative?
Whenever a person is charged with a crime, obviously there's the chance that there could be a jury verdict of guilty. This would be the way of guaranteeing that his wife would not go to jail. And in fact, this is the scenario that is analogous.
If you plead guilty, you get your... discount for acceptance of responsibility. So on your theory, that's coercion, right? Because if you don't plead guilty and you go to trial, you're likely to get a heavier sentence.
Oh, now that is true.
Right, but that's that we don't consider that coercion.
Well, the coercion
in your case.
Pardon me. The coercion, Your Honor, is the coercion as suggested in the language of the Stewart's case, where the example was actually given. For example, proof that a third party had threatened to kill Stewart's brother unless Stewart pleaded guilty would meet a Rule 32E standard.
That's true. If the government threatened to kill his wife, yes. But making a deal for a spouse or other family member, that's extremely common.
Well, this gets into...
If you call it coercion, it's not in the interest. It's not going to be beneficial to these spouses and family members. It's going to say, well, you know, they'll have to, you can't bargain on their behalf.
This issue is one that even the United States Supreme Court, with the package deal, has indicated that special care needs to be taken. And this court, in the Bennett case, 2003, said that upon disclosure of a package deal, the district court should make a more detailed examination as to the voluntariness of each defendant's guilty plea pursuant to the package deal. And in this case, the district court asked just a compound question, one question, to Dr. Spillman. One of the agreements had to do with the dismissal of the other defendant, in this case, including your wife, who was here, and the dismissal of other counts to which you have pled guilty. Defendant, yes, sir. That was the only colloquy.
What would you have liked him to ask your client?
Well, I believe that pursuant to the Bennett case, in which it said there should be a more detailed examination, the following questions. I would suggest that there are six questions that should be asked. First, Dr. Spillman, the court notes that your wife is a co-defendant and that as a part of this deal, your plea of guilty is linked to the dismissal of charges against your wife. Is your plea of guilty entered because you love your wife and you believe your plea will protect her, or because you are actually guilty. Number two.
That's not an either or. It's not a good question. Right?
Well, that
you could believe you were guilty, but be motivated for pleading guilty.
Well, this is more detailed
by the fact that it was beneficial for your wife, right? Nothing wrong with that, is there?
Well, you're testing the very thing that the package deal concerns are.
Testing. What is it you're concerned about?
Testing whether or not what happened.
What would be bad would be if he thought he was innocent, but he pleaded guilty anyway for the sake of his wife. That's
what
you're concerned about.
He
pleaded guilty. He said he was guilty.
Under duress.
What would the judge have said to him that would have extracted a retraction of his guilty plea? I don't understand.
I believe that both at that particular time, Dr. Spillman and his wife were defendants in the case. And pursuant to Bennett, what should have happened is that the question should have been asked of Dr. Spillman and then also the questions asked of Mrs. Spillman as to whether or not there has been either any request or pressure to plead guilty so that one is able to be dismissed and the other then would not be dismissed. And similarly, if this was motivated not because of actual guilt, getting that the core principle of voluntariness.
But it's obvious that if they offer a break to the wife, they're doing it in order to try to induce him to plead guilty. What's wrong with that?
What's wrong with it is that he was put into a position of falling on the sword to have.
It's always true whenever you have a family members who are implicated.
But the idea when you have a package deal
is. What do you want to do with the family members? You want to say you never can. You never can try to help out a family member, or what?
No, I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is that there should be the detailed examination. Because
what would the detailed examination show that, in your view, would preclude accepting a guilty plea?
It would show whether or not it would at least be putting on the record and bringing it to.
What
to
would he say that should convince the judge to reject the guilty plea?
What would the defendant say?
Yeah.
Well,
you want a detailed examination of him by the judge. That's to elicit statements from him. Now, what statement would he make that would persuade the judge not to accept the guilty plea?
If the judge asked the specific question of whether or not your wife, one area would be, has your wife put any kind of pressure request that you do this in order that you plead guilty when you're innocent, in order for me to have a better
sense.
So you want
the
other side
to ask him whether he's really innocent and he's just doing it for his wife. Is that what
I really believe that that should be asked. I believe that.
But he did examine a lot. I mean, this wasn't done in 5 minutes, was it?
No, there was a colloquy that took place, and there was a general questioning about the voluntariness.
And look at the plea agreement, specifically three paragraphs, and focusing on it. I mean, to make sure this is what it was. Because the problem is there are just lots and lots of documents, weren't there? Isn't that problem? Lots of documents. That's why there were no copies made. It cost too much.
Well, the problem was the lawyer didn't get the documents and didn't make use of them to prepare a defense. That was the problem.
Well, that's your ineffective claim, I guess. But it just seems that the situation may be, I forget how many, whatever, 28 or something? How many counts were there?
There were many counts.
Yeah, and lots of documents. And so maybe he could have gone through this himself and picked out some. Maybe half of them he could have made an excuse for or something. But really, there's a vulnerability here, isn't there? This isn't just a guy that is completely without fault, but he's coerced into pleading so his wife doesn't get charged along with him.
If I may respond, Your Honor, this is a man who was completely without fault, and those documents become important because, for example, the biopsy reports, the plea agreement, the plea, and what he pled to and what he was found guilty of was collecting money, defrauding the government for collecting money for biopsies that weren't given. When we finally got our hands on it, we have the biopsy reports. The biopsy reports show conclusively the biopsies were there. That by itself shows the inference as to why, I mean, he would plead. It was the coercion that he was placed under, that if he did not plead guilty, his wife would go to jail. And that was in the context of his wife, his lawyer.
How would she go to jail if he were acquitted?
If they were both acquitted, nobody goes to jail. This was his way of guaranteeing that he thought at the time the most loving thing to do. He has since realized, of course, that the most loving thing to do would be staying in the truth that he's innocent.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Rafior. Mr. Holler?
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The District Court in this case did not abuse its discretion in denying the motion to withdraw the guilty plea in this case.
Well, maybe we ought to go back one step further, though. Did he deny his discretion in not holding a hearing? Isn't that the problem here, that Judge Sharp didn't hold a hearing on this?
If you'd held a hearing, you'd have
clear sailing.
Well, I think we would have clear sailing if there had been a hearing, but I believe that we have clear sailing anyway, because I don't believe, based on all of the items that have been submitted, that there is any basis for the defendant to withdraw his guilty plea. What the defendant wants to claim is that he walked into court and perjured himself to the court, that he knew full well that he was innocent, and he lied to every single question that was asked of him as to whether this was voluntary, as to whether his lawyer was effective, as to whether anyone had coerced him, as to whether he was guilty. And the Stewart case and the Shue case and all of the cases that this court has set forth have established that that's not a fair and just reason to withdraw the plea. And so when what happened at the aborted hearing was the defendant came up and said, this is what I want to do. I want over the next 5 days to spell out all of these things that established that I was innocent and that I knew full well I was innocent at the time and I came in and committed perjury. And that's not what one is supposed to do. The only cases...
How about the allegation that his attorney was not effective and indeed did not permit him to fully participate in the preparation of his defense? Now, if Judge Sharp had held a hearing on that, you know, we'd have the whole story out and this would be done. But how can we handle that on this record on appeal? That's bothering me.
Well, I guess the issue is whether there's anything in the record that would establish that, having received the documents, that there's any question as to whether this defendant... What would the additional documents have demonstrated that would have caused some sort of change? Every document...
That's what a hearing would have decided. He would have either had to come up with it or the judge could have said, there's nothing here. But we just don't have that.
Well, there aren't any documents, Your Honor, that the defendant was not aware of. Every document that is at issue in this case is all of the documents that were seized from the defendant during the search warrant. So if the defendant made known to his attorney specific documents, the defendant would have known, no, there are documents that establish my innocence, and the defendant would not have come into court and said, everything that the prosecutor said in this long factual basis, everything that I signed on to is true and is correct. The defendant knows what's in these documents. These aren't documents that the government withheld that come from some other source than the defendant himself. So the documents are not something that now come forward and say, hey, here's what's going on. I mean,
Could he have gotten copies of the documents?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Could he have gotten copies?
Yes, he could have gotten copies of the documents. The defendant was permitted the opportunity to either inspect the documents on site or to, because he had retained counsel, to pay a copying service on his own to copy the documents. And the defendant elected not to pay to copy the documents. Even after Mr. Rafior came into the case and was given the opportunity of a copy service, he said, no, I want to come in and just inspect the documents and make copies there rather than pay to copy thousands of documents. And that was a choice that both of those defense attorneys made. The only restriction that was ever placed at all on looking at documents was made after the change of plea hearing, and so couldn't relate to the voluntariness of the plea, and was simply a statement of, there's only 12 days left before this hearing, And you can only, over a period of 3 or 4 of those days, come in and inspect documents because the government has other things to do rather than babysit you while you look at documents. That's the only restriction that was placed.
How do we just get around the holdings of our cases that just simply say that when a district judge is presented with a claim of innocence, before he denies the motion to withdraw the plea, he either, one, conducts an evidentiary hearing, or two, he denies the motion with an explanation as to how the evidence is insufficient or incredible? Judge Sharp didn't do either one of those, did he?
What he does is he cites to the Stewart case and he cites to the Sislowski case and he cites
to cases.
That's
a lot of help to us.
Well, Your Honor,
there's an institutional problem here, isn't there? I mean, who's going to go through this record and find out whether there was absolutely no stone that could have been unturned, right? Either us or the district judge. And the district judge decided that we were going to do that work, right?
I don't think that's what the court decided at all. The court states that he has gone through thousands of pages of documents and that he reviewed the documents and he set aside 4 days for hearings. And what happened is the defendant came into court and said, what I want to do is to get up here and to tell you that everything that I said was a lie, that I had all of these documents. The defendant doesn't sit here and say, Judge Ripple, if the lawyer had given me more documents, I would have not pleaded. The defendant says, essentially, I wanted to fall on the sword for my wife. That was the only thing that I wanted to do. And that's not coercive under the case law. The defendant also says, all I did was perjure myself. I lied to every single question to accomplish that. And Stewart and Hsu and the other cases before this court, Underwood, clearly established that is not a fair and just reason to upset a Rule 11 proceeding. So what is the purpose of having 4 days of hearings of the defendant coming in and saying all of these lies against his defense attorney and against the government when the case law is clear that even if almost everything that he says is true, there's no basis anyway to withdraw the plea because what he's asserting is I perjured myself knowing full well because I had access to all of these documents. That's what the defendant states over and over.
Did the government remind Judge Sharp of his obligation?
The government stated that it was prepared to put on Mr. Kuss. The government stated it was prepared to put on evidence. But the government also asserted that there wasn't any need for an evidentiary hearing because the only instances I've seen where a plea has been allowed to be withdrawn are cases like Grohl or cases like Gomez Orozco, where the defendant comes into court and says, at the time of the change of plea hearing, I genuinely believed I was guilty of this offense because I wasn't aware of an entrapment defense, or I wasn't aware of the common law of Texas in Gomez Orozco. And now, look, we've come forward, we've learned of new law, and we understand that even though at the time I thought I was guilty, I wasn't.
Help me out with this. The defendant's position, as I understand it, is that he never had a meaningful opportunity to evaluate the documents in terms of his guilt or innocence because his lawyer wouldn't let him touch the documents.
His lawyer would not let him touch the documents. That's
correct. How do we know whether there is any truth or not in that statement?
Well, on what basis would the ability to physically touch a piece of paper that has a biopsy report on it ever rise to the level of causing someone to change their mind about whether they're guilty or not?
His touch, I'm sure what he meant was an opportunity for me to personally study the documents and determine whether I have a case that this was all a big mistake. We don't play semantical games. That's what he's saying.
The only point that I have to that, Your Honor, is if let's even assume that every speck of that was true, and it's I would assert if this were to come back for an evidentiary hearing, it's obviously not.
If what?
If this were to be remanded, we would obviously present evidence that that's completely untrue.
Yeah,
but
may
if it
well,
were
that
true,
may well be true. Yeah, that's my concern.
If it were true that he was not given the chance to study specific documents, the point is he states in his affidavits firmly, I was aware of all of these documents. I knew all of these documents existed. He knows the documents exist. He knows, based on his testimony, that he's done all of these biopsies, that they're all medically necessary, that he has this new technique that no other dental expert has ever had for finding patients. He knows all of these facts. And he goes into the plea hearing, and he still says, after the prosecutor reads three pages of things that he knows are lies, he says that's all true. So how does that have any impact on what his defense attorney said? He says, I'm completely satisfied with what my defense attorney did. I met with him. The defense attorney gives his own colloquy. I met with him for 2 hours on about six occasions. We spent 4 hours on three occasions reviewing documents. And he says, I'm satisfied with my attorney. He's stating now, everything that I said was a lie. This isn't a question of, you know, I just learned after the fact that I should have looked at these documents that I wasn't aware of, or I just learned after the fact that I had an opportunity to look at documents and I didn't know that. He's asserting, I knew all of that, and when I went in there in February of 05, I lied. And under Stewart and under Shue and under all of these cases, that is not a fair and just reason under Rule 11 to withdraw your plea. So that's why we would assert that this was that Judge Sharp was correct to say, I
he
don't need to waste.
He said he forgot what was in the documents.
Your Honor, I believe he's made a statement in his reply brief to that effect, but if you read his first affidavit, he states over and over again, I knew I was innocent, I knew the documents established that my innocence.
No,
my
I meant in the district court, did he say, when he asked for this hearing, did he say he'd forgotten the documents?
He's filed four or five different lengthy motions. In the first affidavit, the initial one where he moves to withdraw his plea, the basis is, I fell on the sword for my wife, I lied at the hearing. He doesn't make any claims. He makes claims that he was not allowed to touch and fully study the documents. He doesn't make any claim he wasn't aware of what was in the documents. Obviously, as this case has mutated and he's filed four or five motions to reconsider, I cannot stand here and tell you that he never made any claim in any line of that, but I'm not aware of any either, at least until the reply brief to this court.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Howell. Now, Mr. Rafier, your time expired, but we'll give you a minute if you have anything further.
If I could remind the court that in the Stewart case and Trussell and so forth, the operative words are voluntary statement and freely given in those. Also, there were the affidavits of the other individuals that predated the plea hearing, where this was the severe dilemma and that was troubling with Dr. Spillman, was that he wanted to protect his wife. His lawyer had done nothing. His lawyer had done nothing to get the evidence that he kept trying to tell him should be there, and he was totally hopeless, and so he was backed into a corner feeling that this was his only chance to save his wife was to fall on the sword. But those affidavits of other people confirmed that these discussions took place before the plea hearing. This wasn't some
when
later.
When you became his lawyer, did you ask the government for copies of the documents?
I did, and I continued to ask for copies, and I was given limited access, and we had made
it. No. Copies, not access.
I would have been delighted to have copies of the...
Did you ask for copies?
What I was told is that the way that they would allow it would be for us to go in the controlled setting, and that I did.
You're answering my question.
I was trying to make sure that... But I do have a specific recollection. I asked that I could have all of them copied and have a copy service do this, and I was told that they would not allow that because that would mean the copies would have to leave there, that the only way to do it was to be making copies in there, and so we actually brought a copier in there so that we could be making copies. So, yes, I did.
You brought a copier in?
Yes. A copier
made
was...
Made copies?
Yes.
So do you have all the documents
now? As many as we could get before they cut us off. We were tightly...
Is this in your briefs or is this just... something extra you're telling us now?
No, it's in the motion to compel. I filed a motion to compel about the limitations that had been there placed upon us, our ability to get the documents, and then that was finally denied, and so to this point we have part of the documents, but even those show the innocence, and that's the...
But now he knew, presumably, didn't he, that there were documents that would show he'd performed these biopsies?
See, that was the frustration, is that he was telling us...
Why was that the frustration? He knew that, and he knew that at trial that those documents would be available to him. So why did he plead guilty?
His attorney did not get any of those copies.
What difference does it make? He knew that these documents existed.
He could not go in there into the court and say, my lawyer's not doing his job.
No, he doesn't have to say anything to have a trial. There's no summary judgment in criminal cases. He could clam up completely.
Because of what had happened, where there had been nothing done by way of gathering information that would have been helpful for the defense, even though he continued to ask his lawyer to do it.
But he knew there were these records showing he'd performed these biopsies.
He did not have specific recollection of everything, but he generally knew that those documents would show his innocence. Excuse me.
All right. So he knew that that the documents would exonerate him.
And he wanted his lawyer to do that, and he never did.
What difference does it make? Do that at trial.
Well, but he didn't have a lawyer who would even prepare for trial. How could he even think about going to trial? At that point, the only option he thought he did had was to try to save his wife.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Ray Fuhr, Mr. Holler.
Domo.